Welcome to this special edition of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. I've put together these Focus Extra shows, in addition to the regular weekly podcasts, in order to bring you all the conversations I recorded live at Focus on Imaging 2013. There's a lot to get through, so each recording will lead straight into the next. In this first edition, I'm talking with Nikon, manufacturers of cameras, lenses and system accessories, and Roscoe, who make LED lighting units, filters and associated products. As ever, you can check out all the show notes to this and all other shows at theactivephotographer.com. As is customary for me at Focus on Imaging, I have caught up with Rob McNeice, who is the Nikon Professional Services Senior Consultant. It's a bit of a mouthful, that, Rob.
You ought to change your description. Absolutely.
And you guys who listened to my reports from Focus last year will know that we were talking about, oh, and I'm going to talk over the tannoy, as I do every year. You will know that we spoke about the D4 and the D800, which are, you know, it's all kind of new and what have you. We've got a couple of other cameras to talk to you guys about this year, but we're going to start off just looking back at those two cameras and the impact they've had in the market and the feedback that Nikon have had on them.
Absolutely, yeah. If you can remember, last year we had to fight through the crowds to get to see the D4 and the D800. Unfortunately, we only had one D800 on the stand. This year we've got a lot more, and they're still very, very popular at the show 1 year on. But no, they've been phenomenal cameras for Nikon. We knew that they would sell well. We didn't actually realise quite how well they would sell. And believe it or not, the D4 over the last year has actually sold better than the D3 did.
Wow.
Within that time frame.
A groundbreaking camera.
The D3, very much
day,
so. Very
it?
Much
I've
so.
But it makes it sound like the 70s.
But we've gone on a year, and absolutely, you know, the pros have lapped up the D400 and amateurs as well. And it's been absolutely phenomenal for us. I mean, it was the biggest camera at the Olympics last year.
Yeah.
Actually, famously, Usain Bolt grabbed one off a photographer after winning the 200 meters.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, because there was a bit of, you know, sort of conversation online about, oh, it was a setup and this, that, and the other. And there are always various stories. Now, what I gather was that Usain Bolt had seen this photographer previously and said, you will get your shot, but he hadn't planned to grab the camera and start.
I think they've developed a bit of a relationship, actually. It's a Swedish guy called Jimmy Wickstrom, who works for Aftonbladet, one of the newspapers in Sweden. And I saw him do the same in Daegu a few years ago.
Oh, right.
And he wasn't quite as famous, but he won the World Championship then. And he did the same with the D3.
But isn't that
nice? It's just a nice little gesture. Yeah, absolutely. And long may it continue.
And let's not you know, mess around. Nikon must love it. It's just the best PR ever.
It is. We have to be careful about our association there, but absolutely. Absolutely, you know, people see it, and it's been phenomenal.
Phenomenal. It was a good moment, and as a spectator, I loved it.
Yes, we did very much so.
I mean, the D4, the D800 have been very well received. The quality of video that's now being pushed around, the sound quality that's coming out. A lot of people hook up a Rode mic, and what have you. So that, you know, things move on and what have you. So we're going to be looking at two cameras. We're going to be looking at the D7100.
That's right, yeah.
And you also have in your hand, let's start with the one in your hand at the moment.
Okay, well, this really is hot off the press, Charles. This is the new Nikon Coolpix A. And it's a new kind of, it's not a new market for us, but it's a market we believe it will sell very, very well. It's the size of a Nikon Coolpix, you know, like a P300 or P310. It's a nice pocketable camera, but it's actually got a DSLR quality sensor in it. So it's actually got the same sensor as a D7000, 16 million pixel sensor, same size as that of the D7000, but with the optical low pass filter removed for extra sharpness.
Yeah.
Also, it's got a 27mm equivalent focal length lens, fixed focal length with very nice smooth manual focus action.
The styling is a lot of you guys who remember film. Do we remember film?
Kind of.
Wasn't it a 35 Ti?
Absolutely.
nice compact design.
That's exactly how I would describe it. I thought the same thing when I first saw a picture of it. Yeah, exactly.
But it's a lovely looking camera, and it's interesting. I mean, over the last sort of couple of years, we won't name other manufacturers for the sake of this conversation, but there's been a lot of retro styling going on, a lot of rangefinder kind of design, and it's nice. But it's nice that you guys have kind of gone, but it can't have been an accident thinking about the 35T, looking back at Nikon's heritage.
I'm sure that was very much factored into the styling behind this camera, and it's going to fit the same kind of market as well, but albeit digital with later technology. Absolutely.
And you've got the milled rugged sort of dials on the top there, and you've got the ability to put a flash gun on there. And,
yeah, it will take normal Nikon speed light.
That's what I love. I mean, you know, I've shot Nikon for a good few years now, and what I love about the Nikon system is that everything works really nicely together. Everything's thought through for the system.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people, they'll hold something like, let's say for argument's sake, the D4, in such high esteem, they'll go out and spend their money on a D4, but they won't think about the bigger picture of their system. And it is such a wealth of accessories, products, add-ons that can create the perfect solution for what they're trying to do.
That's right.
So it's nice to see that from we've got something like the D4 all the way down to these newer, more compact design releases. You guys should really take a look at this because, like Rob said here, it's fresh off the press. This is its unveiling, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, we had a press event yesterday for it, but this is the first time it's been shown to the public.
Yeah.
In fact, this is the first time today. It's the first time I've even had a camera, one of these cameras in my hands.
Yeah.
And we've had people asking us over the first couple of days of the show. I'd really love a Nikon that takes a small Nikon that takes RAW that does macro.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm having to think in my head, just hold off.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. We know this camera is going to be very, very popular.
Excellent. So watch this space, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So let's look a little bit bigger.
Yep.
And a little bit more sort of functionality in terms of lenses and the system and what have you. We're now making our way over through the crowds here, and it's actually quite nice. We don't have to fight people off all the cameras as we did last year. Whether we're actually going to get our hands on the 7100 or not remains to be seen.
I'll see if I can make one available. Sorry.
No worries.
It's probably the most popular DSLR of the show at the moment. Let me just come over here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
While we're doing that, do you want me to just run through some of the feature highlights of the camera before we put it in our hands?
Yeah, sure.
Well, the 7100, I mean, it's not a replacement for any camera. It's not a replacement for the D7000. It sits alongside our D7000. So it's there to strengthen our lineup of cameras. So it's a DX format sensor, which is the smaller format, but it's a 24 million pixel. And also it's got the optical low pass filter removed, as we've done with the D800D, because we believe that with a lot of higher resolution cameras, a moiré doesn't have to be, it's not so much of an issue. So we've done that. So we believe it will give you very, very sharp, high quality images. Unlike the D7000, it's got a very durable magnesium alloy chassis. In fact, what I can show you, if that's all right, is I can show you the body of the camera.
Okay.
Because if we can't get a full work... Oh, here we go. Here's the camera. Sorry.
As you can see, it's kind of on the fly here. And you have to remember, I'm here talking to Rob about these products, but the guys from Nikon are here to talk to their public. It's, you know,
that's
I'm just
it.
Lucky to get the access. So we do have the camera in our hands now. So let's see what we've got.
Okay, so as you can see, for those that are familiar with the D7000, it's very similar in terms of its look and its styling. However, it has been ergonomically changed a little bit. For a start, it's got all new rubber grips, which really do feel very nice. And we're getting great feedback from the customers here. They say, these grips feel lovely, they're solid.
It's a different type of feature that makes a heck of a difference.
It does absolutely. But also we've slightly ergonomically changed the mode dial as well, which is probably one of the things that photographers are going to be touching the most, so it's a very positive action to that. It's got an all new 3.2 inch screen, so it's a 1200 dot screen, so very high resolution, very good colour accuracy as well.
So what was the size on the 7000? Was it a 3 inch?
I think it was a 3 or maybe 3.1.
Yeah.
Forgive me, I'm not 100%. I know it's slightly bigger than this.
That makes a hell of a difference.
Yes, it does. I know it's slightly bigger anyway.
Yeah.
The other things that we've increased, obviously the whole new sensor with the optical low pass filter removed. This also is capable of taking 6 frames a second, so it's a lot faster than the D7000 as well. Also, what's very exciting for a lot of photographers is we've got a new crop mode on this. So as you know, it's already DX format, which gives you a 1.5 times crop on your focal length. But with a 1.3 crop that you can add on top of that, it gives you an overall crop factor of 1.9. Now that has two benefits. benefits for the photographer. First of all, you've got that extra reach, so if you're using 200mm, it makes it closer to 400mm. But secondly, it means that the AF areas cover the whole frame, so you can go completely from left to right, and you know, if you're shooting wildlife or, you know, birds or something like that, you can get the AF point right to the very edge of the frame, which is something photographers have been asking us for a long time.
And you guys are very good at listening to photographers. I mean, it's such a simple thing. Everyone thinks about, you know, research and development and what have you, but actually it's so nice to see a revamp of a product or an evolution of a product where you think they have actually taken that on board.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the top of the camera here. I can't remember from memory, with the, because of course we're talking about shooting video as well.
Yeah.
It's on the
input
top
mic,
here.
Yeah.
That's the input mic. Is that a new positioning for it?
It is, yeah. Typically before, the mic was at the side, yeah. Most of the cameras. And it's a good thing that you brought that up, actually, because this is the first of our DSLRs to feature a stereo mic.
Right.
So typically they were always just a mono mic, yeah. But this will give you obviously better sound, but better stereo sound as well. Of course, it still has the 3.5mm jack socket if you want to put in an external mic, like the ME1. Yeah.
Excellent. So, I mean, those of you who may be looking back in the past were thinking, well, should I get a D7000, and you've held off, and for whatever reason you may have not looked at the D800, for example, now might be the time to start looking at the 7100. It might be the perfect solution for what you are looking for your own shooting needs. So, I mean, that's just a quick glance at a couple of cameras here. One thing that Rob did mention to me, and I picked up on it earlier today, was there's a wonderful rig of cameras set up above the Nikon sort of, I don't know what you guys are calling it, like
the seminar area.
Can we take a little wander
over? Of course,
yeah,
let's do that.
So we're going to just come around the corner, and just now we had, I think someone was giving a seminar, and so hopefully it's not too noisy, so we might just speak up a bit. So, Rob, I'm stood here, and as I say, I'm not a towering man. I'm sort of under 6 foot, and you know, a few feet above me there is this arc sort of a line of cameras. Now, if you guys imagine you look at the sidelines or behind the goal at football matches, you'll see cameras on little stands, remote, ready to take shots. So imagine that sort of arrangement, but I don't know, how many cameras are there?
There are 50 D800 cameras
so
there with 35mm lenses.
50 of these cameras all hanging upside down. I say hanging, they are positively rooted to this this rail that's here. So what exactly is the deal here?
Well, I think the best way to describe it for your listeners is actually it's very similar to a small Wembley arch. So it's a 180-degree arc at sort of a 45-degree angle. And we've basically got, it's by a company called Time Slice, who have pioneered bullet time. They've done bullet time for a lot of movies and adverts and pop videos and so on, and basically what they do is they get all the cameras to fire either at exactly the same time with a lot of very complicated electronics, yeah. Which I couldn't even begin to understand.
There's
how they do
it. There's a lot of wiring up there.
There's an awful lot of wiring. They've got 18 computers controlling these cameras.
Amazing.
And it's all sent down by what we call this umbilical cord, which links to the little control room that you can't see behind the scenes,
yeah.
And basically they can create an MPEG movie from these 50 synchronized pictures that are taken in the 180 degree arc, so it kind of spins around the subject.
And I know that you guys like to do something like this every year. I think last year you had a time-lapse.
We've had a few time-lapses, actually. We've done them for the past few years. In fact, we're doing another one, which maybe we can talk about. Maybe we haven't got time. But we're doing another one as well with a robotic head this year.
Oh, okay.
This is something that adds a new dimension to us. And it's not Nikon. You know, it's a company that uses Nikon, and we work closely with them. But it's
a company
called
TimeSlice.
It's been the biggest talking point for us at the show. Absolutely. And I think for many people, we've just seen people's mobile phones going up, taking pictures of them. And I know there's been loads of tweets and Facebook posts already with this. Yes.
And you know, at the end of the day, it shows your camera's in situ, being rugged, you're not afraid to hang them up there, you know,
absolutely.
It's confidence in the product and all the usual things. Do you want to go and talk about the robotic arm? Because we have got
fantastic, let's do that.
Because it's all something a bit different. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because when I was waiting to have a chat with you, I was looking at it and I was intrigued by it, sort of, you know, whizzing around here. So tell me what we've got here.
Right, okay, well what we've got is we've got a robotic D4, so we've got a D4 C4 on a kind of a standalone head, if you like, which is controlled by some pan bars, similar to pan bars you can get for video control and so on. Actually, my friend Nico here is from MRMC, Mark Roberts Motion Control, and we actually hooked up with these guys ahead of the Olympics a year ago so that they could install robotic cameras for us, get cameras in positions where photographers couldn't get, so up in the catwalks of the various venues and so on. Now, these guys, I think their heritage comes from the film industry, and they've worked on films like Avatar. They've done some really, really high-end stuff. So to them, these little D4 cameras are probably quite simple, quite small to work with, but it's amazing the technology that these guys have. So you can see you can actually control this camera from a separate head. Nico can also control the zoom as well. You control every aspect of this camera's functionality from this remote head here. Wow. And this is what a lot of the photographers and the big agencies were doing at the Olympics last year. And we have plans for these to go in a lot of other installations. Yeah. And since the popularity of them last year, we've had a lot of other companies very interested in this setup.
And it's just, it never ceases to amaze me how, I mean, technology over the last, you know, 10, 12, 15 years moves at a pace, but, you know, video was the big thing a while back, and now it's just ramping up and it keeps on. Nico, come and have a chat with us, because you're kind of stood there and, you know all about this. I mean, how have you found it in terms of what clients are asking for? Because it's kind of a game changer, isn't it, that you're, like, Rob, you're starting to use this sort of technology, which is another feature for you, it's another talking point, it's another thing that people are going to talk about. So Nick, I mean, how are clients using this stuff more and more?
We, like Rob said, we deal with the film industry, and what we've done is we worked with Nikon to do the Olympics, and now we've actually built a specific head, a smaller version, for the digital cameras, because the demand is so high. It gives you the functions. You can also do it from portrait to landscape, so you've got every control over all the cameras. We're bringing the cost down now to suit the digital age, because it's the way forward now.
And that's the thing, I mean, as a working photographer myself, you know, we have to pay for our kit, we have to make conscious decisions about what is a good investment, what is suitable for our output. This isn't going to be for everyone's requirements. I certainly don't have a use for this sort of thing, but it's good to know it's there, you know. But it's a bit like with a lot of this technology, it will gradually filter down and become more accessible. Like, I'm just trying to think back. So for example, you had, when I had my D800, for example, the technology on that came from the previous pro spec models, it just keeps on going, doesn't it?
Oh, of course it does. You know? Absolutely. I would imagine, as Nico said, these systems will be getting maybe smaller as well, and you know, potentially more affordable. Just enables people to shoot in situations and places that they couldn't even dream of putting a camera previously. Yeah. Of course, with wireless, you know, that camera could be remote. That camera does not have to be anywhere near to the pan bars, so you can actually have it and connect a monitor up and see from live view what the camera's seeing. Your camera could be on the other side of the world, and you could still be shooting using controlling it.
So, of course, this winter we saw Chasing Ice.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of you guys will know that I went to see that film about the documentation of Norway.
Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see the film myself.
Okay, so
I really want to see it.
Yeah,
really,
it's a series of D200s set up to take a picture. I don't know if it was every day, or I forget, my mind's gone blank now.
It was a big project.
Yeah.
Do you think it was released last year, but they were using D200s, so it was a good 4 or 5 year project.
It's these cameras are going in, you know, more and more remote places, literally remote, being fired remotely. Wireless technology, Wi-Fi technology, it's all starting to become the norm.
Very much so.
You know, you guys listening, when I talk to Robin, say 5 years' time, we'll be thinking back to this, thinking, God, that sounds antiquated now. You know?
We probably were all the right things are coming at the moment.
Cool. Well, Rob, as ever, a real pleasure catching
Thank
up you
very
with
much
you. Of course,
you.
There will be links in the show notes to what we've been talking about. I'll also catch up with Nico before we go, and I'll take your details and make sure you guys get a plug so people can talk about, can see what we've been talking about. But for now, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank Cheers. You.
I'm stood here on the Roscoe stand with Richard McKitty, who's one of the sales execs at the show. And we're at the back of the stand so that we're not in the way of all the public trying to have a look at their lovely products. Now, you guys may know Roscoe mostly for coloured gels that you would put across your lighting, across your flash guns. For our American friends, that would be across your strobes. I know there's a bit of a, you know, we all call it different things. But what you may not know is Roscoe also produced some really nice LED light panels, which those of you that shoot video, you'll know that it's getting to be a more and more popular lighting system. So this is kind of new to me, looking at your lighting panels here, Richard. So start where you want to start. Tell me something, show me something, I'm all yours.
Okay, so Roscoe now produce light pads, which are basically LED technology, and they're used for all types of photography as well as video. So they can be used for macro photography, portraits, they can be used for newborn photography, which is, again, a very fast, up-and-growing type of photography, and they're perfect for that because there's no heat. The LED light pads are portable, so you can use more mains or battery power. And they're a very soft light source, so there's no need for diffusion or anything like that. And they're very portable, so you can use them on mains or battery, which is great. And it gives you a quality light. It's not like any other lights where you get shadows. With the light pads, you don't get any shadows.
And when it comes to a lot of people, something that's quite close to their hearts is the idea of colour, neutral colour balance, white balance, all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a very clean, crisp light.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what is their, obviously on the Kelvin scale, is it, where are we looking? People to relate it to, whether it's daylight or whether it's, where's that stand?
So we do two versions. We do daylight and we do tungsten. Mm-hmm. And they're the true colour temperatures, because obviously we're in the business of colour temperature. Mm-hmm. Also, we do colour filters, which you can adjust over the top to get the correct colour temperature you need. Most of the time when I shoot with them, it's on a daylight white balance, and I use a daylight version.
And we've got, say, looking around us, we've got a series of products here. You've got the light panels, which are supported here on Manfrotto Magic Arms.
Yeah.
Regular listeners will know that I have a real thing about Magic Arms and Super Clamps, because they're such versatile of kit.
Yeah.
But as well as the light panels here, across the way here, we've also got the light pad loop, which is a... Most people would look at it and think, oh, it's a ring flash.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's a constant light ring flash, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Built on the same technology?
Absolutely. So the loop is fairly new. It's about seven or 8 months old. And it's the same light pad technology. So you've got your indirectional LEDs inside. And the difference with this is you mount your camera onto the 50mm rod system that it comes with. And you've got the light at the end of your lens. So if you're doing a portrait, a head or a shoulder shot, or if you're doing a macro shot, you've got the light right at the end of your lens. It's an on-axis light, so that is invaluable. It can be handheld. Again, you can put it onto a tripod if you want to. But again, it's a really soft quality light, and it's interchangeable with all of our light pad technology as well. So all of the accessories work with the loop, and again, it can run on batteries or mains.
So you touched on accessories there.
Yes.
A typical system, of course, the beauty with anything within photography, whether it's lighting, whether it's cameras, whatever, you buy into a system and it is exactly that. So you would expect there to be a whole raft of accessories, bolt-ons, what have you. In terms of people, if someone was to look at your kit, and of course I'll be linking to this in the show notes, what are they going to find in terms of the system, that in terms of filtration, of gels and bolt-ons, what is the system there?
Well, we have different types of dimming options. So we have an inline dimmer, or a dimmer which you can control via DMX. We have extension cables, we have grip equipment. So if you want to put the light pads onto a stand, we do a light pad swivel arm, which will go directly onto any lighting stand and goes directly into the back of the light pad. We do splitter cables, so you can split two light pads or even four light pads, depending on your power supply. We do more rigid gels that go out, that slide in front of the light pad or go on the front of the light pad loop. So they're all interchangeable.
And just to give people an idea, something we haven't touched upon, the physical dimensions of these. We've got, from what I can see, we've got the square light panels, but you've also got a strip light.
That's correct.
So what are the dimensions of the square panel there?
Okay, so we have a 12 by 12 inch in front of us here. Or 1x1, as some people like to call it. We also do a 24 inch by 24 inch, which is a 2x2, which is the biggest off the shelf option that we do. We also do a 3 inch circle, a 12 inch circle, 3x12, 6x12.
Wow, so this is just the tip of the iceberg.
It is, yeah, yeah.
and the strip light that you've got here.
Yeah.
Just explain a little bit, if you would. Obviously, I appreciate the when you would use a very narrow light source and what have you, but given your customers' feedback, how they're using your particular strip lights, what are the applications with those?
That kind of application would be more like some people use it as a side light or a kicker light, for example. So if you've got a model and you want it to highlight the back of their hair, for example, you could use that. It's a nice strip light and you're going to get the length of the back of their head. In terms of product shots, you could use it vertically, so you could prop it up and it will give you a nice strip light on, for example, like a mobile phone or something like that you're taking a picture of. And also, for example, if you wanted to get light across someone's eyes, you can use it vertically or horizontally to give you that shape.
And what sort of output are we talking? Because people often talk about, with flash, they talk about 400 watts, 500, 6, whatever. But what are we talking on these panels?
Well, with LED technology, it's slightly different compared to a flash unit. So, for example, the power consumptions on the 1x1s here are 24 watts or 2 amps. The light output that you get, we measure it in lux.
Yeah.
And close up, you're going to get probably about 2,000 lux as an output. So it's quite bright. But obviously, it also depends on the amount of ambient light in the area as well.
Sure.
So if you're outside and it's a sunny day, you wouldn't use a light pad because it's the same colour temperature.
Yeah.
You're not going to get anything out of it. But if you move into a darker setting, so for example, a studio, for example, you're going to get the best kind of output of the light pad itself.
I mean, the great thing with focus is every year there's always something that grabs your attention, and there's always technology which maybe you saw the year before, but all of a sudden there are more people developing it. Now, I'm sure you must find this. I've known about you guys, to say, for the gels for a long time, many years. I get your emails sent to me and what have you. How are you finding it? We're not going to name names, how do you find this, the competition within this particular industry with the light panels? Because it is, this year, I've noticed maybe 4 or 5 other manufacturers that are here trying to push the same sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And obviously you have to put yourself as distinct from the competition.
Yes.
But how are you guys finding it? It's probably a good thing in a way, because it keeps you on your toes.
Absolutely. And what you have to understand is that LED technology is the way forward. And in photography terms, LED technology is still new to a lot of photographers. Even at the show, today, you're getting photographers that have never used LED technology before or continuous light. There is more manufacturers, so the competition is very strong. But what differentiates our product compared to everybody else's is that it's already diffused, it's already soft, and the LEDs are indirectional. Whereas all the other manufacturers, the LEDs are directional, therefore giving you some shadows, and you're going to need to diffuse it at some point.
And that's one of the things that I think for anyone learning lighting, and it should never be dumbed down how important a good command of the basics of lighting.
Absolutely.
For a lot of people, the moment they start diffusing light or just changing the angle slightly, a lot of people shoot with, for example, traditionally flash on camera. The moment you take that light off axis, it just lifts your photography. Of course, you have to have a good technical command of your camera and so forth. But it must be quite encouraging for you to see examples from people that use your kit, which you might think, that's a really clever idea. We hadn't thought of that.
Absolutely. We get that all the time. Our job at Roscoe is basically to give the creative people, whether they're photographers, lighting designers, cinematographers, products that they can use and be creative with. And every day I meet people that have used our product in a way that I would never have thought of.
Yeah.
Always.
We're a very resourceful bunch of photographers.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's kind of just round things off a little bit. In a moment I'll get you to give us a website somewhere people can go, but
yep.
I'm just looking at one of the display boards that you've got here, and you've got the LightPad HO kit plus kit.
Yes.
So if someone was wanting to go head first into this and think, do you know what, let's not mess around, I'm going to get a kit to get going, what is it, a standard kit that's basically out of the box ready to go?
Absolutely, yes. So we do a range of kits. The HO Plus kit is one of them. The idea is that you have everything in the kit. So you've got all the accessories that you need, you've got all the power that you need. And in some kits, we actually give you light stands as well. So basically, it's a run and gun kit where you can set up on the fly. You can do a three-point lighting setup. You can shoot, and you can move on.
And I've got to say, as a photographer, I have, as you might imagine, many cases, many bags of varying different things. But actually, if I know that, for example, that is my grip kit or that is my lighting kit, I'm not going to get to a shoot, if I'm working with an assistant or if I'm working on my own, I'm not going to get somewhere and be mortified to think, oh, I haven't got that, because everything is good to go. So you're taking the guesswork, the confusion out of the equation for people.
Absolutely.
And looking at this, you've got, a lot of people will be aware of Pelly cases. There are other brands available. Hard shell cases that offer amazing protection. Judging by the picture there, that's the sort of approach that you're taking, is giving really good protection around your kit.
Absolutely, yes. And we do some smaller kits which come in a softer bag. So we do bronze, silver and gold kits, which come in a Think Tank laptop bag. And because of the thinness of the light pad, they fit in nice and easily, and it goes over your shoulder. So you can go on a tube with it, you can travel on in a vehicle with it. Very accessible.
And that's the thing for me. Regular listeners will know that, you know, shooting outdoors, with, it might be some mountain biking, it might be portraits in the field, it might be, you know, what have you, I need to travel light, I need to have a practical solution to carry my kit. So, Pelly cases are great, I use them a great deal, but sometimes going across a boggy field, it can weigh a ton with my kit, and it's not the way forward.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Richard, it's been really good catching up with you. I'm aware of you guys, have been for a long time, but it's really nice to kind of put some names to faces and what have you. So let's have a parting thought. Give us your website. Of course, I'll link to this in the show notes.
Okay, so it's www.rosco.com, and you'll see different sections on there if you click on digital and still photography.
Lovely. I wish you the best for the show, because I've been here, we're now sort of a couple of days in, and you haven't been short of visitors.
Not at all, you must
be doing something right.
We are.
So I'm sure you're having a great time. But for now, Richard, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Remember, you can check out all the show notes to this and other Focus on Imaging specials, as well as the regular weekly shows, at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcasts.